in, say, 1945, and what things were like.
Talk about the, when you went into the sawmill business.
Yeah.
Don't lower your voice.
Yeah.
They want this on tape.
That's right. Okay, were you, you were farming in 1945?
Yeah, I was farming. We went in the bush in 1948.
48. I don't know much. We went in the bush in 46 because Diane was a year and a half old. 48 was the year John was born.
Right.
Oh, 46. 46, okay. And how come you went in the bush? Gene.
Was over.
Albright was in the bush and figured everybody that he was making lots of money, so we decided we would try our hand at it. So.
And you probably got money if you needed you just to supplement the farm income.
Yeah.
Well, we had intentions of getting a place of our own because the boys came back from the war. There was the three boys, and there was only that half section of land.
Oh.
It wasn't really enough for the three of them to farm. And we, because we were, like, Michael's the only one married, we wanted to get a place of our own so that the other two would be left on the home.
So you had three brothers in the war. You know, we
two
were
brothers.
Trying to,
two,
two
brothers.
Brothers. We were trying to list all the fellows from Athabasca that were in the war. And I didn't know if there were any Regans. They must have had.
Bruno and Wally were both
Bruno
in the
Wally,
Air Force.
In the Air Force. Well, that should be on there. Okay, so how much money did you make that year? Can you tell us?
We were just buying equipment.
I don't know if we made any, but we must have, because the following year we bought it. You know, we made a payment on the cat. And we did not even with the cat.
Yeah. How much would a down payment be?
A D6, yeah.
A D6?
A D6, Alice Chalmer.
Oh, yeah, Alice Chalmer.
A D7, each D7.
D7, okay.
Well, do you really particularly want this to start that far after the war?
If you want to go back a little bit during the war, that's fine.
You know, what I'm thinking is that it's very interesting to note that change began during the war.
Okay, that's a good
like
point.
Like, he's talking about buying machinery or you know, using this money from that...
extra income.
Forestry enterprise for getting, you know, building a machinery or the homestead. But I'm thinking about the shooting of rabbits that my dad
during
and David
war,
and my kid brother did during the war. And actually, that one winter, they made enough money with the rabbit skins to buy all the horse machinery that they never had before.
Really?
That's right. That's
Mike,
how good the...
Mike shot rabbits.
How much was a skin in those days?
6 cents.
6 cents.
Well, they had gone up a little higher.
They were 10 later.
Much started in 6 cents.
Yeah, I think I remember my dad shooting some.
We were both shooting to buy. We both got ourselves ski pants and jackets.
Skidoo suits.
Of course, she was killing rabbits. I was killing rabbits.
Now, when you say skidoo, you didn't have any skidoos.
Ski suits.
Yeah. Right.
Winter.
I don't think that I've ever seen rabbits as thick as they were
that
year.
That's
right.
That was in
1942.
We got married in 41,
and
then
we so we make a fire.
Just a minute, should we have to talk one at a
time? We put the flag, and that come, and make a fire, and skin those rabbits, and sometimes we got 200, 300 rabbits, so you got $12 a day, you know, 3 hours.
And that was a lot.
And if you go work, you get $1 a day, but you got a hell of a time to find it, job, you know, but we used to make a... Easy, 300 or more, you know.
I had a repeater 22, and I stood in one place, and I shot 8 rabbits. And Wally, he hollered at me, he said, "How come, why are you wasting all them shells?" Because he heard me shooting. I says, "I'm not wasting any shells." I says, "I got 8 rabbits with 8 shots."
You got 8 rabbits? I come from Monville. In October, we had a stack of green feed, and was so much rabbits, so I just took it 22 and bang, and you got in 3-4 rabbits with one bullet, you believe or not.
Is that right?
They were
so we have to, next day, we got no sleigh and snow was there, so anyhow we carried the green feed, put in the top, and because there was no roof, you know.
Yeah.
So we put in the barn, because if we build that green fit to be nothing left.
Even the stacks were just literally chewed out by the rabbits. Yes. Yes. I remember that myself.
So would you shoot them at night as well?
Oh yeah.
In the dust.
Well, you don't have to see them, but you just shoot to the stack.
No, and you try to get them.
You shoot.
Well, my cousin Mike Shalapa and I were staying at Bill Rose's up here up the road, you know, where Bob Priest's house is. And I was old enough to have a gun because you had to be 18 and register the gun. And so they bought me a 22. We used to shoot rabbits back and forth on the way to school. But at night, we'd go with a flashlight. And that wasn't uncommon to shoot, and you'd get three, four in one shot. Because they were just one beside the other. And if you just shot, it went right through all their heads.
My goodness. Yeah. So you'd skin these things, and what you'd have,
dry them. Mom's mother chased us out of the house. She wouldn't let us dry them. We had to make a special
place outside. Okay, where did you take those first?
To Hinckley.
Hinckley was here then.
Hinckley.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Oh yeah, that's right. Hinckley. So what would you do any other furs? Would you get any other furs during the winter?
At that time there was quite a few weasels yet.
Yeah, and squirrels.
Weasels, what would weasels be a skin?
Real good one, 75, the most dollar.
A dollar. What else would there be?
Squirrels. Odd coyote.
Squirrel was about a real good one, 25, 30 cents.
30 cents? Coyote?
See, the big demand for the rabbits at that time was because they were using the fur to line the Air Force suits. And so that's why there was such a good price for them. And so these other furs were fair price, but it was sort of secondary. The rabbit was the thing.
Oh.
And then they got a disease, and actually in 43,
they were,
44, they were disappearing.
They were still buying the rabbits for mink food.
Oh, yes.
I'm still sorry to this day, like Hinckley had a pile of rabbits by Daniel's barn there, but they were just as big as a haystack.
Yeah.
Of these carcasses.
The other thing that was a good start was because there was such a demand for grain and food and so on, you know, for the war effort to feed the army, the soldiers, Air Force or Army or whatever, or sailors, that actually during the war it also was a boost to the rural people because their grain prices began to go up where they were, you know, very, very poor before that. It was during the war years that those things started to climb in price and so times began to change. But if you really want to know how much time changed, not only because of that, but because also of the science contribution from then on, I was living at Dr. Wright's, who was the richest man in Athabasca at that time, and the convenience was an ice box.
Yes,
they had electricity, but they had no fridge. Fridges were really quite a luxury, even beyond, I guess. Dr. Wright wasn't an average Athabascan. He was considered, the highest, income person in town.
What year now? This would be in the early 40s.
Well, it was 41, 42, 42. That I was at that season that I was at Dr. Wright's. And they only had an ice box, and they had one of those ice houses in the back lot there, like would be back of Mrs. About where Mrs. Belita's house is, back of the Legion, New Legion now.
Yes.
He had about a 4-foot wall made of logs, and the ice was put there and covered with sawdust. And he'd go in and bring a block, put it in the top of the ice box. And
that was they cut ice towards spring, before the ice got honeycombed,
And
they would just go out
to the river,
saw these blocks. We had ice. We had a nice box ourselves. And my
out at the farm.
Yeah. We had a nice house.
That was in 45, 46, And you had these thick, you had two layers of logs, one on the inside, one on the outside, and then in the middle you had it filled with sawdust, and that acted as an insulation. And that's where you kept your ice pretty well all summer.
Bigger farmer have a ice box and a smoke house. smoke. Yeah. See if he killed any cattle.
That's right.
Or pigs or smoke
the meat.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To cure it, otherwise you can't keep it.
Well, you did used to cure meat with just using salt. Two would make salt cured.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pork.
See, we were married. We were married in 1944, and with some of the money that we got for as wedding presents was what we got this ice box.
But it wasn't that you couldn't afford a fridge. I don't know how much
would
a fridge cost.
But there was
Dr. Wright had power. There were no fridges to be bought. There were a few, but those were for maybe in the hospitals or you know, the vital places. But for private homes, even the rich didn't have them. Well, maybe some very, very high mucky muck might have had it, but you know, someone with a fair income did not have a fridge because there was no such thing. Mm-hmm. After the war, they began to be more available.
Manufactured in quantity.
That's right. And then it took a long time. That's
right.
That
would be in the '50s already.
That's right. It took a long time before, you know, you could buy a fridge.
So you didn't have washing machines then at home either, at that, say, in the 45, 46.
Well, not on the farms. In towns, they had.
They had
them. We had gasoline washing machines.
Gasoline washers.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And we got ours in 49. I said when David was born.
Yeah.
That's the time we got our, and that was 1949.
But you see, during the war years, yet when we were staying at Rose's, that was like the following year, but even at Dr. Wright's or at Rose's, she still had an old washing machine that was like a barrel, you know, and you worked the handle back and forth. It had a gear, and that's what turned, like one gear meshed into another, and that's what turned the gyrator kind of thing.
And it had a ringer on top that you cranked.
Yeah. Yeah, both at Mrs. Rose's and at Dr. Wright's. That's the kind of a washing machine they had. But after already, they started getting the in the rural areas, it was mostly gas ones.
Yeah.
And in town,
they
began to get electric ones.
When did power come across the river, for example? When did you get power?
In 57,
not before 57?
No, not 55, we started getting our house built. And in the summer of 1955 we started, and then during that winter there was very heavy snow. I remember walking
because
keeps
Jerry
the fire
was
going.
Yes,
and walking across through snow drifts, you know, to keep the fire going, because we had hot water heating at the time, or we were thinking of installing hot water heating, and then a couple of times the furnace overheated and it blew the valve, you know. Because there was no electricity, and we had a stationary engine that generated electricity, and Bob Montgomery used his tools, you know, that was a 110, you know, was it a voltage.
Well, what was that?
And then in 57 in January, after Lois was born, that's when we got power. I remember Mike came home and I had the house all lit up, you know, purposely, and I said, this is the residence of Mike Creepin. Who shall I say is calling? And Mike came home from the bush, you know.
But some farmers, some people out north of the river had their own plant. Remember, my father had all these
plants.
What did you call those?
Generators.
Generators.
Yeah.
Generators.
Yeah. Forced across the river,
water
power generators.
And when would he have gotten that?
Dad had, your dad?
Yeah, dad had a
Your
power,
dad had,
yeah.
I know my father.
And I think Garmin and Mike Burtis.
But then a little later, your dad had about maybe 3-4 years after the...
Yeah, but Walter Clark, I think, was the first.
When would he have had that?
Hmm?
What year would that have been?
It had to be 37 or
38. Oh, yeah. See, I remember, I think Mother and Dad got theirs in 46 because Andy was born then. And I remember we had the plant when we built our new house.
The other scheme
after
the war.
Mrs. D went to Bikuni teach.
38, 39.
Kachukom, 21 part. That's fall we got.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So that would be...
Well, that was just
38, 39.
And Arthur Port, tried wind generator. He had that wind charger. You remember?
Oh,
there were some that tried the wind charger. The only one I can think of that had that wind charger across the river was Arthurport.
And was that
and
very successful?
That wasn't very successful either, because
they had a big string of batteries.
About as long as this couch
and wider, and then they charged them all up some way, and then if there was no wind blowing, well, they kept
using the batteries up. But it wasn't very satisfying.
Because you couldn't rely on the wind, you know, that was the trouble.
That's right, yeah. Okay, let's go back to what Olga was saying. Like during the war, sometimes you say things started happening. People started buying machinery.
Yeah. Things began to be manufactured, mass production. We had the beginning of mass production.
That's right.
Okay. So that would have been after the war ended?
During the war.
Already during the war.
You see, it all started with building of airplanes, building of the different equipment for the war. Sort of the assembly line production really began in full swing in Canada. And so it did in Edmonton and all over. And after the war, once the needs of the war effort were satisfied, then they began to, through this same mass production, manufacture the kinds of things that would make life more convenient in the homes.
Okay, how about outside? How about on the farm? The machines that you bought for the farm?
Well, the machines too.
What kind of machinery would have you had during the war? What did you use on the farm?
Have a disc and a plow.
And a cultivator.
And horses.
A binder. Horses, that's a thrasher.
We still worked with horses. Mike had horses for the seed drill. Because remember the spring, Diane was born, the horses bolted on you and ran away?
So when did you buy the tractor?
Yeah.
What year did you buy the tractor?
But we had a tractor for cutting grain. And
we had a tractor for cutting grain,
and then people... 14-year-old.
1939?
1929.
14 years later.
1923.
Yeah.
1943.
So you got your first tractor in
1943. Because we worked together with Pete Shalapoy 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we had the tractor and I had the machinery, and after 14 years we split, so I bought the tractor.
How much would you have paid for your tractor then?
1800.
What type of tractor?
John Deere.
Yeah, and Pete bought tractor, so he paid not quite, he paid 1200 because he got the 1250 for 1000. Bushel meat, so he got $50
left. David, when John Burtish used to go around with a threshing outfit, did he use a tractor to run the threshing machine?
Yeah.
Okay, so he did have a tractor before the war, because...
Well, he got the tractor.
A lot of people had
it. His dad bought the tractor.
What year?
1920.
You mean Vi's dad?
Yeah. He bought the tractor and he bought the car. And
1930?
Yeah,
1930. When we came on the farm in 1928, and we had a tractor already.
And next year was a bad year.
Awful slow.
So your dad couldn't pay.
Two bottom plow was all it would plow. And you could walk faster than.
Then you could go. Well, and then Dad had a tractor before that, even, because I remember his first tractor was the Twin City, and I'm sure I wasn't more than 6-7 years old.
Yeah.
So that was in 30.
A lot of people in 30.
And your dad would have had the thrashing machine then too, I suppose, because he used
to
go.
No, he didn't have the thrashing machine. He used to, Gorman thrashed for us.
Later on, when your dad used to go around our community used to thrash for people too.
But that was, later already.
Yeah. Okay, I was going to ask you, how big a farm do you, how many acres did you farm when you were buying that tractor?
We had
1/4.
Well, quarter,
but it wasn't all clear.
About 50 acres.
No, 50 acres.
Yeah,
okay, and you said something about 1,000 bushels you had of grain?
No.
That was
I got. But Pete Shalop, I had 1,000 bushel before that, so he bought the tractor.
And how much land would he have had?
That time he bought the tractor. About 30 acres.
Yeah,
about
that.
And that was 1,000 bushels. How much, what did he have? What kind of grain? Wheat? Mm-hmm. Wheat? And how much was wheat a bushel?
Well, the wheat and grass. We had the grass.
Alfalfa.
Alfalfa and Altasweet. One time I had this, we bought the Jovzavodka quarter for 4,300. And I borrowed $2,000 in the bank. That's the first time in my life I borrowed in the bank. And we trashed those 16 acres because Joe had 8 acres and I had 8 acres. We trashed, so I got $4,500 for a 16 acre. Yeah.
Of seed, you see, because
of seed. And I left some for seed. Was it 36 cents a pound that time?
See, that was the other thing that was really very, very good idea on the farms was the seed. Sweet clover, alfalfa, and the alta sweet. Actually, a sweet clover and alfalfa first
was
they yielded and you know they were paying well
you
also.
You made money on that.
That's right.
Kind of
more than the grain.
The most people make money because that rotation, you know, you put the crop and put the grass, so you got the good crop and then you got the big money from the grass.
And from the grass you could do it several years before you plowed it under.
How many banks were in Athabasca then when you had to borrow money? How many at that time?
Just the one.
Imperial Bank of Commerce.
What year was that? You talked about when you were buying another quarter of land.
Well, in the 40s, because I was at high school already. Well, after you
about
and Nancy were married.
About 47.
Oh, yeah, that date?
Before David. Must have been.
I thought it was when I was in high school.
No. She was in a university. Mom was sick, she had the operation.
That's what I figured it
and
was.
And then mom...
Well, that was 48.
48?
Yeah,
that was
the summer of 48.
47
yeah.
and 48. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm right.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. So there was only one bank in Athabasca, that was the Imperial Bank. What interest did they charge you at that time?
Really, I think... I don't pay much because...
About how much?
Supposed to be 3 cents.
3 cents? What do you mean?
Three percent.
3%.
I don't think I pay lots because I borrow and
but
after.
Okay, go ahead.
I come trash the Alta Suite.
You just paid it off.
Yeah.
I see.
But it still was 3%. Doesn't matter how much you pay.
I was just wondering what interest rates were at that time. My goodness.
It's quite a change.
Yes, quite a change. Well, it's gone up and down, and I don't know what
it's
going to do.
Well, even buying land, like we bought a quarter section of land there and went to the lawyer and made out papers, and it was for $1,200 for 3 years, and you had to pay $400 a year, and the only time you paid interest, like the deal we had, was if you didn't meet your payment.
That's right.
Otherwise it was interest-free.
That's right. There were deals
like that. When would that have been, Mike? What about, that was later on,
Mike and I were married.
That could have been about 1940,
42. Oh, is that right? Oh. Who was the lawyer here then?
P.G. Davies.
We went to Collington to that.
Oh. No lawyer in Athabasca?
No, not at that time. And he owned a...
Shaffer?
Lumber yard or something there in Collington.
Oh, you don't mean Norman Jack?
Yeah, Norman Jack. That's the guy.
Heaven's sakes. Uh-huh. And he was a... Was he
well,
a lawyer?
He was, I don't know, Notary Public.
Oh, yeah, Notary Public, yeah.
Maybe so. That was probably it.
But after that, you used to go west
to Clyde.
To
P.G. Davis.
Yeah. Who used to be... connected with Lloyd Chamberlain.
Well,
later Lloyd Chamberlain.
Davis had his brother here.
Yeah, right.
Well, that was first. His brother.
Because we was buying Zawadka quarter, so his brother
was
making paper. But Chamberlain come later on. His brother got sick, And he left Athabasca, so Chamberlain came.
Oh, yeah. Chamberlain would have come in, what, the early 50s?
No, I really don't know.
I would say closer to the 60s.
As Chamberlain.
Yeah, we have to ask first century. He can tell something like that.
Exactly.
Okay, so we're after the war now. War has ended.
Yeah.
Your brothers got back. Did you start farming big?
No, not really. What was that, in 40?
46, you decided...
When you bought the hog place, I was in.
Oh, no, the hog place was bought after my... But you, you went, like, in the bush first a few years.
Yeah.
And in 46, you went into the bush when Diane was, like, a little over a year old.
So while he was in the bush, well, because you're like, what were you doing? Keeping the home fires burning. How many cows?
Milking cows?
How many?
Well, it depended. We had 6, 8. But, you know, they would dry up in the summer months. Or, you know, we'd have them freshen in the spring. And in the winter, we never milked, you know, that many days.
Yeah.
They dry up.
Right.
Usually left, we had one cow
during the
winter for milk for yourself.
Yes.
You'd kind of arrange it that way. So
right.
There's a milking cow for the winter.
But we
just for your own milk.
For your own milk.
That's what
we butter. You make
butter,
your own butter.
Yes. Made our own butter. Cheese.
Cheese. Right.
Well, the winters were so severe that nobody would even think about having a cow outside. I know not in our district.
Kept them in the barn during the winter.
That's
it'd be 50, 60 below and it stayed that way for weeks.
Yeah, we had lots to do because we had to do chores. We had 6 cows, they stayed in the barn.
Right.
You fed in the morning, then you let them out, you watered them while they were out, you were cleaning the barn.
Right? And I suppose a lot of people kept pigs.
Yes.
Pigs for your own again.
And sometimes melt the snow too.
If you ran short of water,
Yeah, no water in the wells, eh?
Only shallow wells, so.
Shallow wells.
Especially in March.
Yeah. And what other kind of chores would be done in the wintertime?
The wood supply.
Wood chopping.
Wood splitting.
Yeah.
Well, how many years? You and I went and made wood for how many years? We'd go out in fall and saw all the wood, and then we had a horse, and we'd pull it out. And bring it
place?
Home, and then they had a saw.
A couple of men.
Yes.
And then saw the wood and plowed,
no,
and then
we would hire. We 3, 4, or 5
get together,
together,
right?
Yes.
So I help him, and
he each
helped
one
me
help each other.
Yeah.
And we go from place to place.
Right. Saw the big pot, and then you had enough wood to chop,
splitting
off the winter.
Yeah, off and on. During the winter, you
for the wood stove,
wood,
right?
For the
when
stove.
Did you get your first? When did you get your electric stove?
After you got power.
When did we say power?
We got
came
in 57.
57.
We got ours
okay.
around 1960. We didn't get our power right away.
See, we were about the first because of the, you know.
Oh no,
the,
we
the
also because we built that house in 1953.
Yeah.
And we got a power shortly after.
Next.
No, we didn't next because it came in 57.
You had a wood stove first.
Yeah.
In
had
a wood stove first.
We all had.
And
so
it
was 1960, I think, we got our power.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got a. First, we just had an electric stove, and then we bought a fridge.
Actually,
we
just. Actually, you know, to go back to some of the chores they're mentioning, there was a lot of work, and. To that business of keeping the cows in the barn and all the rest of it, but there was a lot of advantage to it too because all of that manure that they had to shovel was natural organic fertilizer, and nobody spoiled their soil like is being done today with the commercial fertilizer, and they managed to produce real good crops. I can recall number one hard northern grain being sold for top price or David loaded a full carload of malt barley. Where do you get that kind of crop going out of this area now?
Gee,
it's, you know, if it doesn't hail out, it freezes out or it rots out because it's wet. It seems like either the season is long enough or the soil has lost its, you know, it's ripening
qualities or something,
but there have been changes that way.
But somehow nature's
nature has changed.
Nature
definitely
has changed.
Has changed.
We had falls that were beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, I was just telling that to Mother when I saw this.
Yes, beautiful.
I remember beautiful falls
yeah.
come from
and
school.
Now, I don't know how many years back.
One time we trashed 43 days, I couldn't forget. And now if you had a 3-day good weather, you're lucky. And it was a 43 day, never stop.
Straight good weather.
Straight,
yeah.
The farmer had a permit because you have to have a permit if you want to trash on a Sunday, you know?
Oh, really?
Yes.
So we trashed 43 days, it was a no...
Stopping.
No stopping, and we was praying for a rain because...
So you could have a rest.
Not the only rest, because the clothes, you know, you sweat like a son of a gun, and you work because sometimes in a tent when a guy waiting for by trash machine, as soon as you slow down, the farmer says, get the hair out of here.
Well, that was
still
in the 30s.
I know, but I mentioned good weather we had,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And now if you had a 3-day weather, you're lucky.
Yeah, like you were saying, that one time with Weldon's thrashing?
28 days we thrashed.
Is that right?
Not
like that's Michael's helping George Weldon thrash, you know, he's helping him operate the thrash
yeah.
machine.
So you didn't ever pay anybody for helping? You would help him and somebody would help you back in return,
you know,
or did you get paid?
You know what, well, you kept track.
Of hours and days.
And at the end of the year, who...
Ever owed anyone?
Who owed, well, then
you'd get some payment. We square up. What would you have paid per day for a man?
It was $6 and $8 for a team, and $6 just for a man.
So now when you say $8 for a team, you don't mean eight and six?
No.
Horses, he'd get eight. Now,
the field pitchers would be
the field pitchers, that's what they were called.
Or spike pitchers at the thrashing machine?
Spike pitchers were loading the thrashing machines.
Yeah.
No.
Well, no, they
off the hay rack, off the...
They help the fellow with the hay rack unload the bundles quicker, you know.
Oh, there were two fellows on the on the hay rack. Not, you didn't call it a hay rack. What would you have called it?
It was a bundle rack.
A bundle rack. It was the same one they used for hauling hay. They used it for hauling bundles.
I guess it was a rack. That's
a
hay rack. So he was called a spike.
Well, the spike, they were called spike pitchers.
Pitchers.
That pitched into the machine.
Into the machine.
And the others were called field pitchers. They
had loaded the...
They helped...
You had extra men out in the field.
Yes,
yeah.
That's right.
One or two
that's
field
right.
pitchers.
You need to remember some of
so those were the ones that got $6.
Oh,
but the
yeah.
man who had a team of horses and the hay rack, he got $8.
Naturally. Yeah, and then plus the farmer that had these fellows working for them provided all the grain and whatever the feed for the horses for that
oh,
day.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well,
sure.
then the fellow that had the thrash machine, he I think it was 5 cents for wheat,
okay, yeah.
4 cents for barley, and 3 cents for oats.
Well, it varied. I think
yeah,
it had
varied.
Reached
yeah.
as much as 6 cents for
later
wheat
on,
later
yeah.
on.
When
yeah.
the price of
yeah.
grain went up.
Did the thrash machine have some means of measuring the grain, or how
yeah.
did you figure out
yeah.
the
scale?
It would,
oh, there was a scale.
So much, and the scale would trip, and then that would mark, sort of have a tally.
It was a kind of a little, like a box or a can that was a bushel, you know, and
half a bushel,
that's right. And there was a kind of a little trap door there that once that weight had been reached, well, that trap door would trip and
it would be telling
yeah.
them.
And it would tell it. And then they'd know how many bushels were
and
there.
And get the number like in your car, you got
yes,
the
like
mileage.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
Recorded it.
But the first thrash machines, they didn't. They used to bag it, and they were paid by the bag.
That's right.
Oh,
like a mud and honey had that.
Oh,
yeah.
For heaven's
sake.
That
takes
it in the early 30s.
Yeah.
So they always used to get a real good man there, so he'd really tamp the bags.
and a bunch of,
get as
bunch
much
of,
as possible,
yeah.
eh?
And a bunch of people with the fork moving the straw.
Yeah,
yeah
you
yeah.
see?
Right.
Oh.
After those...
In the
30s,
that's
yeah.
right. But after the war already, they had the threshing machines with the blower, which blew the straw into a pile wherever you wanted it.
Yes, then you'd have your haystack, your
yeah.
straw stack. Yeah.
Yes,
yes, that's right. Oh.
And some had, like Martin had a little machines with the fork, and some have an elevator, you know, like for the hay, you know, you got
yes.
for those. So they just put the straw there and go. And a few
and
people did in a stag and making a little stag, but that was already a big farmer.
Yeah.
Did that, you know.
Yeah. So you did you notice the big change then after the war? Did things really start to pick up? People were buying more land, and there was more money.
I don't know if I would say that people were buying that much more land, but people were opening up their land, because what they had done until then, they did mostly by hand and backbreaking kind of work to clear the land. But once that a few more acquired tractors and bigger breaking plows, well, then they... And then an odd one was able to afford to get a
brush
man
cutter.
with a brush cutter or a bulldozer. And so that's where the money went. You open up more acreage of land because, you know, the grain was a good price. The seed crops were paying.
And people
were going into cattle more.
Were
and
they?
And why them start to buy after more land? Because the system changed, that machinery went so high that small farmer couldn't farm no more.
That's
so
right.
He's selling. And who had a strong nerve, he figured he gonna make it, so he buy more and he worked day and night, but he never make not much better living like before war, that man had only one quarter.
But
and now he had a 5-6 quarter land. He was in a worse position he now, and that before the war, one quarter.
You're saying people now are worse off.
Sure.
Yeah.
Financially.
But that was in the 60s when they started buying more land.
More land. Yeah.
But before that,
they were just clearing
Clearing. What year did you clear when you got, what you call it?
Harris.
Harris was bulldozing and...
Well, we cleared over 80 acres that time.
Mother lived yet.
Yeah.
80 acres in
She died in 49.
So that must have been 47, 48?
Yeah.
When you started clearing with the bulldozer.
Well, 46 or 47, he just called war finish and he come from overseas.
That's
and
when
he
started opening up with bulldozers
from Clark.
Stop again? What? No, I was interested in this bulldozing. After the work, what would you pay a fellow with a bulldozer? By the hour, by the day?
By the
hour?
By the hour.
How much would you pay then?
$8
an hour.
Depending on the size of the equipment they use. Some charge as high as 10, I remember, Mike.
I see. The bigger the cat or whatever.
Yeah, if they had a bigger cat and they, you know.
How much could he do in a day then? How many acres could he clear in a day?
Depending on how heavy
the
bush was.
Heavy the bush was, of course, but...
You see, Harris come, he had a brush cutter, or how you call it. So he cut to, I think, to 8 inches thick.
How come our phone isn't ringing here?
And he just go from one farm into the other.
Uh-huh.
And after, like, he come to our place, next day after Christmas, he start. So from our place, he go lower across a deep creek, and then in the fall, he come back, and then he...
To pile it up.
Push the pile, and those big tree standings, so he push the trees, and put in the pile. And then... 2 years later, Galishman comes, so he charged $10.
Yeah, Galishman was on $10.
But Harris charged in same kind of outfit.
They worked night and day.
Yeah. Even my brother worked whole summer for a, like, he started at our place, and Mike says, let me try. He says, well, maybe, he says, if you want, you can work for me. Because he had the only two guys, but after he got the three shift, 8 hours, you know, day and night.
Yeah.
So Mike worked just about the whole year.
They would clear land in the winter.
In the winter, them cut.
It's easier to cut the brush, isn't it?
From small brush to 8 inches.
Oh yeah.
And easier to cut because you got the snow. The small brush standing, you know. So
it's
then cut the
right
rail, just
yeah,
like you cut the hay,
you know,
with the
mower. Brittle.
Yeah, it's brittle, right.
Yeah, and then in the summer, then push the big tree and pile, and they're all.
It actually helped keep the topsoil from being moved, you know, and pushed with the with the trees.
Trees, right.
When it was done in the wintertime.
Yeah. That's right.
Thank you.
Okay, now you were talking about mixed farming.
Thanks, Chief.
That's right. That's probably what everybody did. Until when? Everybody had mixed farming. You kept cattle, you had grain. Things changed. Like, people don't do mixed farming very much anymore.
The beginning of the 70s when things started to change. Because, you know, they sold, like David and Nancy sold their farm. That's right.
We still have cows, we still have pigs.
Chickens
for ourselves.
You know, and sold cream and...
See, we milked cows during, even in the 40s, in the 50s. We milk cows, 5-6 cows, or then we went as far as 8 cows, and we'd sell our cream, separate, sell it, like every week, we take it to the creamery, and that was our income for groceries.
Wow. What would you get for a can of cream?
Well, at first, I think it was about $8. $5.
Five.
And then it went to 8, and then it went to 10. And 12.
How many gallons?
5 gallons.
5 gallon
I'm saying 5 gallon can.
I think the peak that it ever reached was $15.
$15
for 5 gallons.
$16, and then 68, like we were saying.
Before we sold.
There's $15 for 5 gallons of cream.
But and people are still selling cream.
And cream now is $30.
For the same,
for five gallons, because Rubians are still selling.
Okay,
and
so
I asked Stacy.
And so are, Billy and Amelia McKellen.
Yeah. Okay.
And she said it's about $30 a can.
All right. Mm-hmm. Now, how does that $30 compare with the $15 that you got in 1968? Could you go and buy your week's groceries for 5 gallons? Not really, eh?
Are you kidding?
Almost?
You just take gasoline, you know, for your vehicle. In comparison, in those days, if you paid, you know, 35 cents a gallon, now you're paying over $2 a gallon.
But for groceries, you could get a lot more groceries for $15 than you can now.
That's right. Well, this is, you know.
$30 doesn't go very far.
No. You could buy lots more groceries.
And the other thing, Guy, only a few people are selling cream. Those who either inherited or bought the quota.
This quota
came about because of the dairy people making an issue over the marketing was down, and they were afraid that they were going to glut the market with everybody producing cream and butter and so on.
Yes.
So they, through the association, they pushed for quotas.
So you could only sell so much.
Yeah, so much.
And
whatever,
you have to have a quota.
That's right. Whatever you had at that time when this was set in, how much cream you were selling in that year, that's what you stuck with pretty
well. What did you do with the rest of it?
Well, if you took it in there, you got penalized.
That's right.
So you kept it at home. What did you do with it?
Well, you kept your milking herd down so that you...
That was not in control.
That's
okay.
Right.
Not very long, I saw on the TV them farmer... opened his tank and let the milk
That's
go.
Right.
Yeah.
You see the milk quota.
Why doesn't he keep pigs and feed the pigs then?
Because he went...
he went straight.
Dairy farming, you see?
That's the difference.
If he had a mixed, okay, then he can feed the chicken
and the pigs,
and,
right.
pigs and be okay.
When did that quota come in?
The quota came in when we were yet.
Yeah.
We sold...
About 65.
That was in the late 60s.
Oh, 60s.
At least 60s. It must have been about 70 or after.
Oh, no, because we had a quota.
We had
That's
a
right.
quota, but we weren't limited to how many pounds of butter fat we could sell or that. We always, whatever we produced, there was never a problem all the time while we were farming.
Because, Annie, you didn't milk that many cows.
That's right.
We milked up to 12, 14 cows.
Annie, we sold at least 68, and we were milking for a couple of years 13 cows, Holstein, and we had a quota. But we never fill up the quota.
Well, we never had problems.
So same thing, because you never fill up.
But when we sold our cattle in about, we sold our beef herd in 1980, and I think it was in about 1975 when we sold our dairy herd, That's when we could sell our quota. We sold our quota then.
You could sell your quota?
Yes.
What do you, somebody else. What do you mean by that? Sell it to some other farmer?
That's right.
Yes.
Well, you got some money for selling? You didn't sell it for an exchange of money. You don't need that.
There was money exchanged. Quota. Actual money.
How much did you get for selling the quota?
It went on auction, same like everything else. Do you bid on it? And you
like
got,
like now, if you want to start a dairy farm, well, you have to buy. Sometimes you pay maybe $5,000, $6,000,
depending. If you can buy it.
Just like a business.
That's right.
Like a business.
That's right.
A big quota.
You know, I didn't know that.
It's almost like something like a franchise almost. You know?
They're keeping their thumb on the farmer, the farmer, aren't they? Was there a quota for eggs?
Yes, there is.
Yes,
there is
still
now,
today.
Yes, there's a quota for eggs.
And in addition, also, you must know that eggs really should not be sold without being graded. Cream should not
or
be sold, or milk, or any of those
products. Or without being inspected.
That's right.
But they are being sold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, they are.
We don't know about it.
No, you don't know about it. When did the creamery close down? I've forgotten now. What year?
Gosh, Alice Donahue would
know
that better.
That
yeah.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, where is the milk and cream and eggs? Where are they going now? Who sells
the
eggs
they
to
take,
a creamery?
They bring the cream here, and there's a...
The NEDP truck picks it up
once a week now.
And takes it to Westlock, and that's where it's processed.
I'm confused. Why is there still a quota when there's nobody's raising chickens, hardly anybody's milking cows? Why are there still quotas?
Because
nobody here. But
they
also
have to have.
There are dairies. There are people that keep eggs. Ranchers that keep chickens,
I suppose.
For eggs, but on a big scale.
Yeah.
Not like we were mixed farming. We just had a few of this and a few of that and a few of that.
Okay, when these quotas started coming, did that discourage people from mixed farming?
No, that's what contributed to straight line farming.
Discouraged the mixed farming.
It discouraged the mixed farming, but it contributed to the straight line.
I see. Okay.
Because everybody decided, hey, but this is better. Like, you know, I'm going to straight grain farm, then I'll be free, and I can go holidaying between the spring work and the fall work. Okay, that, you know, there's that advantage. But at the same time, there's only that one income kind of thing.
Look at before, everybody on the farm had turkeys.
That's right.
And that was all sold at Christmas time.
That's
like
right.
For Christmas.
That's right. You had an income at that time.
And,
if you couldn't sell your grain, you had something to feed it to. It was either your hogs or your chickens or your turkeys or whatever. So, if you know, it was kind of like that you had an income to rely on at different seasons.
That's
as
right.
Well as you yourself provided a market for your own goods in a way. If you couldn't sell it on the market, you could use it up with a different thing and still, you know, sell that.
And then we had the creamery.
I
had geese, I sold them in the creamery. We sold the eggs in the creamery, we sold the cream in the creamery, and all. So there was your income.
For that matter, some people even made homemade butter and sold it. It was a cheaper, but what they called farmer's butter, you know. And
we had the quota for the grain, but I had no trouble because we keep the pigs. So I feed through the pigs. Sure, sometimes pigs go real low, but if you keep the pigs for a
long time,
all the time you make a half more what you.
That's right.
Because at certain times you get a good price.
Well, that's the same thing like with grain. Grain didn't always stay the same, it fluctuated. And so if the grain was really low, it just was possible that maybe the animals that you fed with that grain, or else the beef cattle, or else your pigs, maybe that was a better price. And so there was always that something you could fall back on, where now this is more of the straight line, because they figured there's the advantage. You have, you know, all the machinery or your equipment geared to only that. Well, that's true. You know, with the expense of machinery, you can imagine if you had the full line in a big scale, well, it's you know, just impossible.
Right.
So from that point of view, it's better to go straight line. But from the point of view that you only have that one thing to depend on for an income, That's a disadvantage, I think, for this territory, because I think that this area particularly is really mixed farming type of area. It's not straight line anything.
No, the seasons are.
See, you take even like my nephew. He's on a big scale, and he's got everything. He still raises.
That's right.
300 hog barn.
Is that right?
80 cows calve out.
And until 3-4 years ago, they also had Holstein cattle for milking, and they had a quota, and they still have some turkeys and chickens of their own, but they just, you know, sell to their customers. They don't sell it to the egg marketing board.
See, now she mentioned it's the egg marketing board that puts all these quotas. And the same thing with the...
I was thinking that was the marketing board.
So
that's right. Well, where is the base of this marketing board? Is it a provincial or a national thing?
It's a national.
National thing.
Yes.
So that really works right across Canada. So when people quit mixed farming and the wives didn't have to feed chickens and pigs, started coming into town to work, right?
That's about the size of it.
Isn't that right? Wasn't there? It seemed at one point here that a lot of farm women started coming into town
to
work.
That's right.
Of course, they still are. But at what point? I'm thinking about 70, 75? When did people start thinking about going to work?
Well, I went in 69.
69.
We still were on the farm.
Oh, you were still in the farm.
We were still on the farm when I started.
Oh.
But that was already, they were planning to stay.
You knew you were coming.
My sister-in-law Mary
was before that.
No, right after.
Around 19.
And she was. They lived on a farm for how many years yet? About 10.
And she worked.
And
she worked that long. Yeah. And today there's still farm women that are
driving, a great many of them are working
in the stores, at the hospitals, wherever.
And so when you take,
some of us though, rather than work in town.
Right.
Preferred to help if we were mechanically minded.
Right.
Preferred to stay with our husbands and operated a combine. I drove the tractor, and we worked as a team. Like instead of having a hired man, Mike and I worked together.
Right.
And we farmed, a whole section of land.
Right.
And without my help,
he would have had to have a hired man.
So we felt this was better. I never minded driving the machinery.
Right.
Operating the machinery and the combine, and so
it would even out that way.
But if you didn't, you
had
to start looking.
Your wages at first on the farm was reasonable, $4 a day.
I was just going to mention today.
And today you've got to pay him $40.
$40 a day plus board and room, or what?
So this is why some of us turn to just helping our husbands rather than hiring out.
Mind you, women help their husbands.
Oh, we did. I did
all
the time.
It wasn't operating the machines. It was helping manually
milking
cows,
right.
Stooking.
Yes.
And things
like
I did
that
as well.
When we got a combine, I hauled grain every year.
Yeah.
I shoveled to the granaries and I hauled grain away from the combine.
You didn't work in town.
No,
that's what I'm saying. Some of us worked on the farm.
Right.
And then others, if they had a vocation,
if
they were a teacher or had secretarial training
or
prior to marriage, they rather, than help on the farm, turn to their,
their
chosen
job.
Vocation and chose to, supplement their farm income with their own.
But today I'm wondering whether all these farm women that are choosing to drive into town really are getting ahead instead of working as a team with their husband, because they get $5 or $7
an hour.
For an 8-hour
day,
how much is that? When you consider that they're paying over $2 a gallon for gasoline to drive in 20 miles or more, and then you have to think about buying more appropriate kind of clothes and everything. I really wonder, and then you buy your lunch and whatever.
Yes.
You really wonder
whether
that is such an advantage. That it seems to me that...
Do you think it's more than just the idea of making money that they're looking at, though, these
Well,
days?
That's what I'm wondering.
I think it must be something more... I mean, that's right. If you figure it out, they're probably not making any. But maybe they just enjoy the idea of...
Getting out,
or what?
I don't know. Because there's still room for teamwork. Like
that's
what
true.
Annie mentioned,
that's
you know,
true.
that's... you know, isn't that better? You're together, you plan together, you work together, and you, when you have a day off, you have it together, yeah, if you're right, going to take a day off or whatever. But this way, once you get on that job, you're clocked, timed.
That's right. But then you have to remember that a lot of men are also, once harvest is finished, how many, what percentage of farm men are going out working on the rigs or in the bush or whatever? Are people going and doing these things still, farm
that's
people?
That's right. Oh,
farm
yes. Oh, yes. I was talking so to a young fellow today. Now, he's not from this area, but I'm sure that's true of a lot of, because I know of a lot of the ones that go out in the wintertime here.
Right.
He says, I go and work all winter and my bank account rises. Then I come home in the spring to put in the crop and through the summer make the hay and take the crop off and my bank account goes down to practically flat. Then I go for the winter again to build up the bank account.
That's
he says, I go out to work so I can farm.
Isn't that the truth though?
That's
because
about the
by
size
the time he buys his grain and buys the fertilizer and all this other business and pays for his machinery, the interest and the repairs.
Fuel bills,
that's right. That's another big expense. It, there's nothing left to give. What were you going to say before, David? You started to say something and now...
Probably I want to say to my wife, come on home.
David, you did not. There's nothing to tell.
Well, let's see. I'm thinking, what else do I want to know here? Well, this has been good. We found a lot of good...
No, but the way the labor before you could hire and everybody was willing to work, when we went in the bush in 46, 47, we would hire men in the fall and they wouldn't even come out for Christmas.
Yes,
they just stayed in there.
So happy to have the work.
So happy to have the work. And in the end, there before we quit, you didn't even know if you... Saturday afternoon, there was no way nobody would work anymore.
What year was that when you quit?
20 years, so that would be about, let's see, 66.
So people weren't that anxious to...
Well, see, the oil boom started,
the
they
oil
started
boom.
Working on the oil
yes.
rigs.
Making good
and,
money.
There was bigger money there, and of course, on the oil rigs, they had the whole weekend off.
Right.
So, you know, then they started complaining, you know, that the lumbering wasn't paying as well, and they weren't... You know,
as anxious to go.
And
now tell me, Mike,
work.
Would they be anxious to go work now because jobs are scarce again? Would you be able to hire them and make them work on a weekend these days?
No,
not very much.
Not very much, you think?
Society is just
a different society.
If them cut the welfare, maybe.
Ah, you think the welfare is spoiled?
But I'm going to tell you, 68. That Minister for the Culture, how's his name?
Strong.
He was at my place, Goodell, and him and Dr. Ballantyne. And we were talking all kind of things, and he said that and that and that. How's the farm? And I told him, I says, you know what? We come to Canada in 1929, and first year we made the 5-acre land. He says, I had a heck of a big future. And I says, now I got 365 acres, I got no future at all. He says, what you mean? I says, I'm going to tell you what I mean. I says, before, you need the help, because I says, you know yourself on the farm, especially in the spring
and fall,
you need the help. So you got all kind of a help. Now I says, I went to Corn Lake, and that Francis, he worked for 7 years, every year.
Francis, one of the Métis or Indian people?
Yeah, Cardinal.
Cardinal, okay.
And I went there, I said, well, Francis, I want you to work. He says, sorry, Dave. I said, what do you mean, sorry? He says, I couldn't go. Why? He says, how much you pay? And that time we pay $10 a day, you know?
Yeah.
And most like a Charlie Gura, he pay $5 or $6, you know, but...
About $10 a day was a good wage.
And he says, look, he says, I got $12 welfare. So he says, I'd be crazy if I go work for you for
$10.
I got the $12. But he says, you know what I'm going to do? He says, if you need so bad, he says, I go and help you a week or 2 weeks for nothing, because he says, you was too good to me for those 7 years, but he says, I don't want to pay.
Hmm.
So you see how...
And this was in the 60s?
68 in the spring.
68. So in 69, we couldn't get the help.
Yeah.
The kids were gone.
Right.
So that's where we decided. We either go big
or not at all.
Or none at all. Because you either have to get big machinery, buy more land, so you could afford to get help.
Right.
Or else quit. So we decided
that was it.
That was the end of our farming.
Well, in a way, basically, that's what that's the decision we made in 1980. We felt the children, you know, Dawn was the youngest, left for university. Lois was in university. There was no point in us, you know, we had just a few more years left before Mike would be, you know, of the retirement age.
Right.
And we thought, well, there's no sense of going big. And so we just cut down, we sold our cattle and just went into straight grain farming, and we're just going sort of...
But look, why would you want to go into farming bigger? Like Gene said tonight, he was saying people had a one quart of land, they raised their children, they sent them to university, gave them a good education on one quart of land. You know,
we had only two quarters and we were renting one. And we educated all our kids.
All the kids.
We had a good life.
Yes, and you had a good life, right. You see, and now people have gone into debt, and they probably can't afford to educate
their kids. Yeah, but you take, even 68, you sold 2 bushel wheat, you bought share. Now you have to sell over 5 bushel wheat to buy a share.
Plow when you sell a plow share.
Yeah, plow, that's a hell of a big difference.
That's the big difference.
And the same with, we were comparing, I just can't remember the figures, but Mike, remember, it took, was it 4 cattle, 4 head of steer,
right.
I think, and you could buy a tractor. That was about the time when we got married.
I think it was in 44. All right.
And then now with 4 head of cattle, you can't even begin to buy a...
Well,
mind you,
true.
They have bigger tractors, but still, there's just
they
no
shouldn't
comparison.
You can't compare.
The margin of profit per unit is so much smaller now.
What you'd get in 42, what would you get for a steer? Pretty hard to say.
Pretty hard to remember.
150?
I think about 150 or something, because I know we sold a steer at home, and there was exactly enough, we bought a mower.
A lawnmower.
A haymower. See, this is the thing.
And today, what is the steer worth?
Because I bought the mower from Charlie Fix. Cockshot, I pay $150.
Yeah.
So probably.
Yeah. Was Charlie Fix the big deal? Was the big dealer here in Athabasca for farm machinery?
Yeah, he was a cockshot dealer.
Cockshot
dealer.
How do you call Falconer Massey Harris?
Massey Harris.
And Redding.
Redding
was a John Deere.
Oh, so you had three types of machinery.
Yeah.
When did Charlie Fix close his? Well, he had a garage, though, and he was still selling machinery at the same time.
Yeah. He sold his garage for a motel with a guy in a Penticton, about 65 or 64, something like that.
Oh. Was Charlie Fix gone when we moved to Athabasca, Gene? We moved in 65.
Didn't Charlie Fix turn that over to the black boy, Doug, or Black?
And Doug was running it, and it was Steve Bleed on.
Yeah, but
there was this problem.
But he traded.